Hello and welcome back in the pocket across the pond. We got a couple of blockbuster trades to chat about, haven't we? Devontae Adams to the Jets and Amari Cooper to the Bills. We'll be talking about the fantasy and real life implications of those trades and also talking through our projection beaters, our forget about it, all the games of the previous week. Looking forward to all the week 7 games. And if it was up to me, we wouldn't be mentioning anything about a certain game that took place in Arlington on Sunday night. I'm Lewis. I'm just joined by Alex Sharples this week. Let's get to it. Sharples, I'm sure we know where we're starting this week. if I can at all get hold of some sad piano and a very slow yee-haw.
We need a sound effect that's like a very sad cowboy saying yee-naw.
Yeah. The Lions trash the Cowboys, 47-9, in Jerry World, right on the family patch. What is there to be said about this, Sharples? As a Cowboys fan, I don't want to say anything about it, to be honest with you.
Oh, I would like you to say a lot about it. I'd like you to walk me through it play by play.
Okay, go for it.
Two things that I was pleased to see. The Lions just absolutely still taking it to the Cowboys, even when they were up 33-3. And Dak trying his usual garbage time, let's try and save some face, and throw in two interceptions. Three,
something
was
like
it?
That, yeah, something like that.
Normally, even when he has a bad game, he'll have a sneaky rushing touchdown at the end, and you look at the stat sheet and you go, oh, well, at least Dak played well. Just a dominant performance for the Lions. The only downside, obviously, they lost Aiden Hutchinson, I think, rest of the season.
100%. That guy's leg snapped in half, essentially.
Oh, was it that bad?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was an angle that they weren't showing on the broadcast, but then was sort of absolutely chucked around online where... it's weird what happened, really. He's tackling Dak Prescott, and as his momentum swings him and Dak around, one of his legs is sort of up off the ground as he's pivoting around, and he's going that fast that his leg basically flew into one of the other defender's legs, like side on, and just broke like that. Like the sheer force and speed that it was going at, it just broke it like that. It's not a nice injury to see, really. So, because at first you thought, like, did someone land on it? Did they? No. It was just swinging around that fast, which is awful, obviously. Great player. That's going to be a bit of a hit to this defense. I mean, this team's still great, but you'd obviously like your best defensive player to be there for your Super Bowl run. The Cowboys outscored by historical margins in the last four home games. Something is amiss there, really. It's not even like people, teams aren't, it's like Old Trafford. People aren't even pretending. They're not even pretending to be, you know, scared of going to Old Trafford anymore. It's sort of that vibe. They've got no presence there in terms of on-field play. I don't know what's going on. I haven't thought the Cowboys were good this year, but I did not think they were this bad, to be honest with you. And this was a real wake-up call, I think, for many people in that building, for what they think the chances are this year. But yeah, that's the fun part of the show. Over for you, Sharples. Hope you relished in it.
I did. Beautiful. Thank you for souring it by mentioning Man United, though. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I had to get something in there. The Buccaneers.
What I will say, though, sorry, Lou, is we might be bad, but we've never lost 47-9.
That's true, man. You know, they've tried a couple of times, but they haven't lost 47-9 yet. The Buccaneers, speaking of Man United owners, the Buccaneers, 51-27 Saints. This was a weird scoreline because the Saints were ahead at half time. And this is, I don't think I've ever seen this to this extent before. This was bizarre. Obviously, Spencer Rattler starting at quarterback for the Saints, who in certain spells looks right. I mean, in a particular spell, he looked great. That particular spell being the second quarter, because that is where every single one of the 27 points that the Saints scored was. Didn't score any points in the first quarter, didn't score any points in the second half, but put up 27 in the second quarter. That's bizarre, really. But yeah, the Buccaneers sort of, I think they were caught off guard a little bit. They did spring to a bit of an early, well, I can't think of the word. They sprung to an early...
Lead.
That word just escaped my brain for a second. Wow. They sprung to an early lead, and yeah, the Saints caught them off guard a bit, but then, yeah. Buccaneers shut them down and then just were scoring for fun. Made sure that the Saints didn't sneak up on them again in the second half. Really, if any team can score 51 points, you're looking good. I mean, the Buccaneers, Sharples, are you a bit hot and cold on them? Or like, this is a good sign. I mean, the Saints were flying high, you know, 3 weeks ago, and now getting 51 dropped on them at home.
No, I'm a lot higher than not too many lows, to be honest, on the Buccaneers. I mean, a bit of an inconsistent day for Mayfield. I mean, three interceptions, but still threw for 325 yards and four touchdowns. So made it very annoying when he was sat on my bench this week. But yeah, they look good. Evans and Godwin, complete two-headed monster. And as much as it pains me to say it as a Rashad White owner and a believer, not only have they got Bucky Irving waiting in the wings, but then Sean Tucker comes on and 136 yards and a touchdown as well. So really high on the offense. Defensively, certainly inconsistent. And I mean, 27 points in a single quarter is a little bit abysmal. But obviously, you know, they shored up completely, you know, shut them out the second half. So no, really high on the Buccaneers. And I mean, in that division where you've got a lot of other inconsistent teams, clear runaway favorite. So no, looking positive. And Baker Mayfield looks terrific. I mean, he must be thanking his lucky stars that he got out of the Browns when he did.
That's it.
Yeah, really good.
And I mean, even in that division, I agree. I would put the Buccaneers comfortably above the Falcons, who obviously the Falcons are getting a bit of momentum. But the Buccaneers, this team, this coaching group, I know they've not got the same offensive coordinator, but there's something to be said for obviously continuity in the building, and the guys who have played together for years and years, and obviously players and coaches in this team have Baker Mayfield coming into his, you know, second year with the team now and stuff like that. Yeah, this is they look good. They look really good, like a well-oiled machine at times. The Commanders 23-30 Ravens. Couldn't quite beat the Ravens, but the Ravens are Super Bowl contenders, so we'll forgive the Commanders there. I think just chalk this up to, you know, no one actually beating the Ravens, really. But we say this every year about the Ravens, and every week even, it feels like. But can they legitimately get to the Super Bowl? You know, beating it, it's well, they've sort of had a lot of good victories now. You know, they beat teams close, they've blown teams out, they beat good teams. Now they've sort of stopped the unstoppable object that the sort of, you know, the is the Commanders' offense. They sort of held them for 23 points, which 23 points is still a fair few, but from what the Commanders have been scoring, the Ravens sort of nipped that in the bud a bit, really. So what are we saying about the Ravens here?
Yeah, I think this is one of the more complete performances. Obviously, Derrick Henry still got his 24 carries, 130 yards and two touchdowns. Like, that's looking pretty standard. But also the passing offense, past couple of games, has really come back to life. Zay Flowers, who looked dead in the water and so probably week four now looks really good. Yeah, and like you said, they were defense not amazing. They're still giving up a lot of passing work, but from what I saw, the Commanders barely got anything rushing. I think I might be wrong in saying this, but I think Jaden Daniels got the most rushing yards of an individual, and that was 22.
And Brian Robinson Jr. was out in this game as well, which I think did probably hit him hard. Great player. So
they look like they're completely scaring teams off from running against them, and so you're always going to, I think, force interceptions and things like that. So this kind of display is exactly what you want to see from the Ravens. Complete, and you know, while it wasn't a hammering, probably in my opinion the most complete I've seen them play. They just need to tighten up a little bit in the secondary, which is strange because they've got really, really good players on paper. It's just teams are finding those little gaps and seams against them.
And like the more that you show teams to the outside like that, the more they'll scheme up players against those guys. But I agree. We've on Flowers as well. I think he's, luckily for fantasy football, I think he's one of the easier guys to predict just because he's hot and cold, as you said. Mm-hmm. He had a couple of good weeks to start the season, then he was nowhere. I think it's when there's going to be those competitive games. But essentially, when the Ravens can't completely run over a team, you know that if they're coming against someone who's got a good offense, who's going to put up a fight, put Flowers in, like no matter who it is, like even if it's a team who apparently has a good defense against wide receivers, put Flowers in, because if the team is in a competitive game, they're going to need to throw it, and Flowers is that go-to guy when they need to throw it. It's just in the games that he's not done well, they haven't had to throw it. That's, you know, against the Cowboys, Derrick Henry ran all over him and stuff. So luckily, I think he's quite easy to predict, but maybe a frustrating player there. But the 49ers, Thursday night football, this was back on form, beating the Seahawks, 36-24. I was in the horrible position of having to start three players in this game because it's like I've got no option to. It's like, you know, Alex talks about it all the time, who isn't here tonight, this episode. Where it's like, it's the Thursday night curse. It's like you're sort of, your Sunday's already predetermined a little bit. And I had DK Metcalf and Brandon Ayuk in this game who weren't mint at all, but then luckily Ken Walker sort of saved me a bit. But the 49ers in a bit of a slump, needed a win, and they got that against the Seahawks team, who can't really make sense of them really, because they look good for fantasy football. They're throwing the ball all over the place. They're scoring fantasy points, I will say, at will, it seems. Mm-hmm. Ken Walker seems to sleepwalk his way to 20 points every week. But I don't really think they can contend against anybody, really. Do you think?
No, I agree. The defense isn't good enough. Long way removed from that Legion of Boom era, unfortunately. And even though the offense does show flashes and has nice pieces, I mean, few field goals. I think one of the touchdowns was actually a kick return rather than an offensive touchdown.
That's right.
I agree. They're in that sort of mid zone, really, where, you know, they'll beat the worst teams. They'll probably get a couple of victories against good teams, be in the playoff run, but you don't really expect them to make a deep playoff run. And then, you know, they're in that zone where they get a mid draft pick, and so nothing really changes. It's one of them. Just stuck in a bit of a rut, I think. Probably need a bit of a refresh. As good as Geno has been for them, I think maybe you're sort of looking ahead now and seeing who might be in the draft to come and make a sort of long-term positive impact.
That's it. And I think if this team sort of sees that by the middle of the season, the writing might be on the wall. New head coach, you don't want to take that straight away by like sticking to a team that isn't quite going to be there. You may want a fresh start for him as well. We'll see for the Seahawks. The Bears and the Packers, both dominant wins. The entire NFC North have four or more wins, which is crazy at this stage of the season. I think I read a stat that was since the merger, since the realignment, I should say, in 2002, realignment of the conferences, through six games, no division has been all teams with at least four wins. So this is, I mean, I don't think anybody projected this, especially for the Birds and Minnesota. This is all these teams could make the playoffs. Just really quickly, who right now after six games, who's your favorite in this division, the NFC North?
Favorite as in who do I think is going to go the furthest?
Yeah, I want to say who do you think, not necessarily who do you think is going to win the division, who do you think actually has the best chance to get to the Super Bowl? Because I think they're two different questions as well.
Yeah, I still think, despite Hutchinson going down, I think it's still the Lions.
Yeah.
I like the Packers, probably second. Vikings, as good as they have been and as stable as they've been under Darnold, I think there is still that ceiling. I think even probably internally, they're still looking ahead to when J.J. McCarthy comes back.
Yeah.
But they have been consistent. And the Bears, well, you know, a couple of wins on the bounce, but against not great teams, I'm still a little bit worried about the Bears. But long term, I do think they've got a gem in Caleb Williams. But yeah, how about you?
Yeah, he looks good. I'm going to stick with my Super Bowl prediction, which was that the Lions would get there. Although I've been a vocal fan of Matt LaFleur for years and years and years, and the Packers just are always really well coached. Jordan Love, I said it last week, he's looked mint. Bit rusty, but he just looks great. I think he is on the day, I think, clearly the best quarterback in that division. So I'm holding on to the Lions out of pure sort of, you know, to hope to sort of keep hold of my prediction. But I sort of want to set the Packers, but I won't. And yeah, like the Minnesota thing's interesting because if they have a deep playoff run, you know, maybe you see the Seahawks sending a couple of picks over to Minnesota for JJ McCarthy or something like that. Some team coming in for him, you know. Texans, Steelers, Falcons, all with nice victories as well. Jaguars and Browns are both terrible. I mean, there's teams with bad records in the league, but you're talking about two teams there who had playoff aspirations this year, and this is a disaster. Let's get on to our categories. Impressive victory, Sharples. I think the writing's on the wall for this one.
Yes, that would be the Detroit Lions.
It would. It would, I agree. It looked like practice out there. They were throwing the ball to you know, offensive linemen, all this. So they were sort of taking the mick of the Cowboys a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not buying it win, though. This is an interesting one. Not buying it win.
Yeah, this was tricky this week, I thought, because there was a lot of good wins. But as I briefly touched upon then, I've gone for the Bears. Two wins in a row now, but it was against the Jaguars. And I can't remember who it was previously, but not a great team. I want to say the Panthers. Let me double check that. I don't want to get it wrong.
Sure, you check that. I'll
Panthers. Sorry. It was the Panthers.
Lovely.
So, yeah, obviously two wins in a row is always great. But they've got a bye and then they come back and they play some real teams. So I think this is when we'll get a proper view of what the Bears are this season.
Yeah, yeah. I went with the Eagles, who beat the Browns, so not much to shout about there. But you could have told the head coach that. He wouldn't have known that because he was shouting all over the place. That guy is a total clone. But yeah, the Eagles, plenty of problems there. Plenty of problems with this team, even though they got the victory. And yeah, like I said, maybe the most unlikable head coach in recent memory, sort of chirping at the fans and stuff. And it's unclear whether he was chirping at the Browns fans or the Eagles fans, his own fans. So it's like, you're not Mourinho, mate. Don't do the whole finger behind the ear thing. Like, yeah. You cannot pull that off. Worst team in the league?
Browns, still. And given that they've now shipped off Amari Cooper, looks like they're really just giving up on the year.
I agree. I said the Browns because, yeah, they've just got even worse as well.
Yeah.
Let's get into some of the best performances of the week, though. Hello, Wide receiver one, Chris Godwin. 11 receptions, 125 yards, two touchdowns. Something's just been unlocked. Like, and when I say something, I mean a portal to 3 years ago has been unlocked. Because Chris Godwin is back. He is back in a big, big, big way. The usage has been amazing, and his performance. I mean, it's one thing getting the usage. It's another thing to still look like you're in your prime when, you know, myself included, after the past couple of years, we're like, yeah, maybe we've seen the best of Chris Godwin. I don't know. I really don't know, because he looks unreal. Really? Same team, Sean Tucker, as you said. Who? I don't... Whatever. Whatever, Sean Tucker, 136 rushing yards and a touchdown and three catches for 56 yards and another touchdown. Just adding a bit more confusion to that backfield, which is great, because they now know they have a third guy who can just come out and absolutely ball, which I'm sure you're loving, Sharples, with Rashad
absolutely
White.
Ridiculous.
Your favourite man.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Caleb Williams, though. Four touchdown passes for Caleb Williams, which is, yeah, something to be said. He keeps getting better and better and better every year, really. I will say four of those touchdown passes, not one of them was to my projection beater, but whatever. Whatever, mate. But yeah, looking more confident every single game at the minute. Tell you one guy who was missed by his team, Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon came back over 100 rushing yards. Really did make that difference for Houston. Came back at the right time, obviously, with Nico Collins being out, because then he could add that other dimension to that team that they didn't quite have. And yeah, Mixon, he's probably going to be like, you know, and he's the Alvin Kamara, he's the Aaron Jones, these guys who, ageless, they just keep annoying you for fantasy football because you draft them later and later every year and they keep doing it, don't they?
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield and Jordan Love also four touchdown passes each. Really, really good stuff. I feel like, is it me or are we seeing a bit of a fantasy resurgence of the pocket passes this year? It doesn't feel like we're talking about, oh, Justin Fields because he ran for this many yards, or Anthony Richardson. Every single week in this segment, we're talking about the Caleb Williams, the Baker Mayfield, the Jordan Love, the Brock Purdy. We're talking about these pocket passes, aren't we? Are we seeing maybe a bit of a fantasy reassessment of that mould of quarterback?
I think so. I mean, I know this year's certainly shifted my perspective on it. I was going into it, I was all about the rushing quarterbacks. I was really high on Anthony Richardson. But you're right. I think these good, solid offenses that you know are going to come out and put up points every week with these stable quarterbacks that have been in. I know Caleb Williams, obviously a rookie, but some of the other guys you mentioned, like a Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
And a Jordan Love. Now we've seen it for a couple of years. These guys who've got good weapons in a good offense. Yeah, I agree. The amount of volume that they get in from the pass is more than making up for the rush. And to be fair, they've also been pretty tight, not throwing too many interceptions as well. Definitely agree. I think next year I'm going to be looking more at the offense as a whole when I pick my quarterback rather than just the guy who's going to rush for a million billion yards.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. You sort of like I think we've mentioned this various times in the projection beaters segment, but it's like, listen, if you have a quarterback whose wide receivers got multiple wide receivers who are projected more than 13 points, it's like the implication is that this guy is going to be productive, really. So something to be said about that as well. Derrick Henry, another great game. Derrick Henry, another one of these ageless guys. He just looks fantastic again, and obviously he's running behind a good offensive line for a really good team. So, I mean, if there was any way to sort of regain a bit of your youth, a bit of that pep in your step, that's the way to do it. Bijan Robinson, two rushing touchdowns. He did it. He finally did it. And by it, I mean score a touchdown. Yay. We've adjusted expectation for Bijan Robinson, I think. Speaking of the pocket passes, once again, Jared Goff, 3 touchdowns. Brock Purdy, 3 touchdowns. This is the cream of the crop here. These guys coming up every week. Speaking of guys who keep coming up on this segment, Cole Kmet. 5 receptions, 70 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's going to have, you know what, every month, Cole Kmet is going to have a game-breaking match that bumps his average up. And that's it. He'll end up as the tight end 3 with, like, 5 good games.
Yeah, Hunter Henry's been doing a lot of that recently. Like, he'll have 4 great games a year where he gets 12 targets and 2 touchdowns. You'll pick him for the next few weeks where he'll goose every time, and then as soon as you drop him, back on again with a 20-point game.
That's it. But a tight end who you can rely on, George Kittle. 5 receptions, 58 yards, 2 touchdowns. Obviously, he's not going to get 2 touchdowns every week, but he has been class. You know what, Sheppel? In points per reception, right, and in points per game, minimum 3 games played, I will say, where do you think he would rank amongst wide receivers? Not tight ends. Where do you think George Kittle ranks minimum 3 games played in terms of points per game in wide receivers?
It's interesting because he's missed a couple with injury, but every time he's played, he seems to be getting 20 points. I want to say he's the wide receiver 8.
You would be bang on. Yeah. Obviously, he's far and away the tight end 1. But yeah, in points per game, that's a great guess. He would be the wide receiver 8 currently, which is, we're talking like Travis Kelce sort of status from years gone by, where you can sort of stand up against the big boys at wide receiver. Really good stuff that we've seen from Kittle. Yeah, Justin Fields, another good game. AJ Brown finally back. Terry McLaurin smashing it. Tyrone Tracy maybe has solidified a role in New York's backfield with Devin Singletary being injured, because it was another great game by him. Zay Flowers, 132 yards, nice. And then, yeah, if you want a good laugh, if you want a really good laugh, go and look up DeAndre Swift's game log for fantasy, the past 6 games, because for the first 3 games, he is unplayable. He is completely washed. Drop him now. Like, maybe 4 points a game or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then the past 3 games, it's 20-plus points per game, this, that, and the other. And I can't really point to anything that's happened. It's just maybe he's going to have these games throughout the year, but weirdly they just, all 3 of the bad ones came at once, all 3 of the great ones came at once. But it's weird to look at, really, the game log. But let's also talk about some guys who weren't that good this week. Saquon Barkley being one of them. Disappointing game, but, you know, I feel like you might get that from this offense time to time for Barkley, unfortunately. Especially with AJ Brown back, they wanted to sort of, you know, he is, I would argue, the more focal point of that offense than Barkley. But Dak Prescott, we'll leave it there. Brandon Ayuk and DK Metcalf, like I said. And also another personal one for me, DJ Moore. I don't know why on earth the Bears could score that many points and none of them go to DJ Moore. They should have done. I laid it out last week on the podcast why they should have done.
It was beautiful.
Daniel Mooney, he's been really nice, but this, you know, I think Drake London is the guy to have there, and I think we're going to see that more and more as the season goes on. But Daniel Mooney, down game, but he is still a really good player. James Conner, just the game script, I think, in this one. Mike Evans as well, another weird one that they would score that many points and Evans be completely out of it. Very frustrating when that. You can sort of understand when it's the game script, like something with James Conner, but with Mike Evans, it's sort of what is... You know, and like we said, they did build a lead, the Buccaneers, but then half time they were down. So there's no excuse not to throw the ball to the playmakers. George Pickens, Brian Thomas Jr., Trey Sermon, not great. I think Jonathan Taylor is itching to come back there. Calvin Ridley was moaning after the game. He didn't catch a single pass. But he didn't goose. He had 9 rushing yards. So there we go. I mean, he was quite vocal. So maybe if you've got Calvin Ridley starting this week, because, you know, squeaky wheel gets the grease and all that. This is a weird one. Trey Tucker, one of the wide receivers for the Las Vegas Raiders. He had a couple of nice games, a bit of a waiver wire stash a few weeks ago. He was awful this week, and he had 60 of the 63 offensive snaps and goosed. I don't know how that happens, that you're out there for virtually every offensive snap and you don't get a single point, but maybe that highlights his actual, you know, ability, I guess. Mm-hmm. Jake Ferguson, not a great week, and Javonte Williams, not a great week as well. But we love to be accountable on this show, which is why Alex, who isn't here, is going to pre-record the accountability segment, and I will insert it in right now.
Yep, thanks for passing that one over to me, Lou. I'm just going to go through the accountability section of the pod. Pretty safe week all round again. We're limiting those misses. Like we said, we're going to try not quite kind of giving the listeners an abundance of hits, though, unfortunately. But like I said, pretty safe week. Lou with the hit at the quarterback position. Jordan Love, 25.62 points, really a game. A good game for Breece Hall at Lou's running back position too, 21.9. Miss on DJ Moore, which is really unfortunate, especially considering how good of a game his quarterback had. And Schultz was a safe tight end. Sharples with the miss on Kyler Murray, unfortunately. I know there's a lot of chatter about Kyler Murray and his fantasy value at the minute. I will be playing people like Caleb Williams over him at the moment myself. And obviously, Jordan Loves. I think Kyler's maybe a tier down from where we thought he was going to be. You know, Mayfield is a name that realistically at the minute you're probably going to have to play over him. Tank Bigsby at Sharples is running back position. He was playing the old projection game here, so Bigsby with the 2.4 isn't actually a miss. Wandale Robinson with the 10 points isn't a miss either, and Zach Ertz give you 10.8, which isn't a hit, but it's a very good game for a tight end. I had Caleb Williams at the quarterback position, another huge week. He's probably going to be on the forget about it this week, but you know, we'll see what Lou does in charge of that section. Hopefully we just keep it running. We don't mess it up too much to the point where I've got to, you know, come in and just completely revamp it next week. But we'll see. David Montgomery, 21 points at my running back position. That was a nice hit as well. Montgomery's looking great. I mean, it's kind of guaranteed touchdown every week at this point. Higgins at my wide receiver position, 14.7. Pretty much hit his projection exactly, which is unique in itself. And Dallas Goedert got injured, unfortunately, and left that game early. So, again, no misses for me in 2 weeks. One miss in the past month. And we've got an extra hit than last week. So we're progressing in the right direction. Lads, got to step up your game.
And cheers for that, Al. I think I had a nice week. Me, from adding it up, I think I got 2 hits, a miss, and nothing. But all will be revealed.
Mine was terrible.
I sort of wanted to chat about that now, but whatever. Lucky week then.
We can have a chat. I mean, Al's probably ripped us when we've got no chance to fight our corners.
That's
so great.
That's true. That is true. No, we'll move on. We'll move on to news and injuries, because there was some of it this week. Large news and injuries this week. The Jets have traded for Devontae Adams. Chapels, as the resident Jets delusional fan, give us your take, and then I will come back with the correct take on this trade.
Okay. I'm not saying boo earns. I'm saying boo. I don't like it. Okay. I think it's very short-term thinking. I mean, I would assume that Rodgers has told Adams he's staying for at least another year, because I don't know why Adams would go otherwise, but saying it and doing it is another thing. I mean, even if he wants to, if he gets a big hit, that might be him done. And if that is the case, then you're probably eyeing up drafting a new quarterback, and then you're back to square one with Davante Adams, who's probably immediately looking for another team. Got a big contract with, I think, 2 more years left on it. I get why they've done it, because Rodgers is there, and there might be a nice little bit of short-term, you know, a short-term boost, a bit of lift. But from a sustainability point of view, I just don't get it, and I really don't get that upper management and how they've talked the owner into this one, really.
Well, yeah, like Al said in our group chat, this shows that, yeah, Salah was maybe out because he didn't want this. But I sort of agree with you. Yeah, it's like, for a kickoff, I would love to see Davante Adams spin this once again as I'm going somewhere where I can win. If you want to do that, go to the Ravens. Go to the Chiefs. Mate, if you want, you've said you want to win so many times, I wouldn't judge you. Pull a Kevin Durant. Go to the Chiefs. Like, so I don't know how he's going to spin it that way. But yeah, you'd think that Rodgers has said to him, here, listen, mate, you know, when they had that lovely moment on Pat McAfee where Rodgers is there doing his little live stream and Davante Adams comes spinning a football in the back. It was really cringy. It was Joe Burrow levels of cringe, to be honest with you. But and we reached new heights of Joe Burrow level cringe this week after he's side note, obviously, but unbelievable run for a touchdown against the Giants. I don't know, 60 yards or something. And you're like, yeah. And then he does the stupidest little pose. One, you know, Joe cringe, always Joe cringe, I guess. But yeah, Davante Adams, I just don't get it either. Like, if Aaron Rodgers must be staying next year then, because you can't be telling me you've traded for Davante Adams now and you think you're going to win the Super Bowl with an interim head coach. I don't really understand it, but whatever. You do you, Jets. You do you. A trade that I think is a lot better for the team is Amari Cooper to the Bills. The Bills have traded for Amari Cooper. Sort of what they needed. This passing attack was lacking. We say all you want about Shakir and, oh, maybe Coleman this and Kincaid, but the guys haven't really been doing what needs to be doing, and the offense has become a bit one-dimensional, really. And you can see that, you know, too much is being laid on Allen and on James Cook. So Amari Cooper, I think it'll be a breath of fresh air. That I have seen the argument of, listen, I mean, if you weren't doing it with Stephon Diggs, what makes you think you can do it with Amari Cooper? Which is a valid point. You know, if they weren't able to do it with Diggs a couple of years ago in his prime, then we'll see. Amari Cooper, I think, is going to add another dimension to that offense, though. What do you think, Shapples?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Diggs thing was mainly down to personality, and I think relationships had started to sour and break down by that point. Yeah. So I don't think that was just based on pure talent of Diggs and Allen. No, I really like it. I think also Davante Adams would have been a nice fit for this Bills team as well. But it's Cooper that got there. Probably the Rodgers thing that swung that, because you'd have to imagine that Bills would have been sniffing around Adams if they could get him. Yeah, really like it. I think, like you said, Allen's missed that number one receiver that Diggs was for him. I like Keon Coleman, but he's not quite there yet. Kincaid really hasn't stepped up in the way that I thought he would. And yeah, although they started off good, we've been saying they've stagnated for the past couple of weeks. They needed something to, you know, jumpstart the season. This is, you know, it's the kind of move that makes sense. Financially, I don't think they've committed much to him. I think he's only got a year left. And from what I remember, the Browns, because the idiots front-loaded his contract, so they're only, I think they're paying him peanuts, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of upside, not much downside. That is what a competent front office can do.
That's it, yeah. Maybe, obviously, these teams played each other Monday night. Maybe they did a rock, paper, scissors or something in the owner's boxes.
Yeah, maybe.
Who trades for who? And another little bit of news, Tom Brady's become a minority owner of the Raiders. This is a massive conflict of interests, because obviously Tom Brady is the Fox main analyst. Just want to read you a list of things that Tom Brady cannot do now he is a minority owner of the Raiders. As an analyst, Tom Brady is not permitted to be in another team's facility, not permitted to witness practice, not permitted to attend broadcast production meetings, prohibited from publicly criticising game officials and other teams. Yeah. What's the point, mate? Choose one or the other. Choose one. Tom, you're very, very rich. Choose. Do the owner thing in 10 years.
Yeah.
This is just stupid, I think. This is really stupid, but yeah. Injuries. James Cook ended up missing the Monday night game with a toe injury, sidelined in most of last week's practice as well. Sean McDermott hopes to have him back for Sunday, but I don't like that word hope, so have a contingency plan if you have Cook. Same with Olave and Marvin Harrison Jr., who were both ruled out of their games with a concussion. Probably expect to miss him this week. Travis Etienne was ruled out of the London game with a hamstring injury. He's week to week, so he'll probably miss this week. And as I just wanted to mention, the Aiden Hutchinson injury as well, which wasn't great and isn't great for this Detroit Lions defense. But yeah, he'll be back stronger than ever, I'm sure, next year. But hopefully that Lions team can rally now without him and figure out a different way to sort of defend effectively. But let's take a look at next week. Week 7 in the National Football League, Sharples. The Bears and the Cowboys are on bye. And we'll start as we always do. The guys with me today, we'll start as we always do with...
Do I forget just about him.
Oh, yeah. I just pointed him. There we go. There is a man in the room. Definitely. I'm not doing this to myself. Forget about it, the guys in your lineups, no questions asked. You know, peek behind the curtain, Alex comes up with these on the fly every single week, and he has entrusted me to do it this week. I'm going to try and do it as he would, per his wishes, but also I want to pick some guys as well for the forget about it. So I think at the quarterback position, I think we'll go Drake May. I think we'll go joking. Jaden Daniels, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen. There we go.
Forget about it!
Stingy.
Stingy indeed. At the running back position, Karen Williams, Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Taylor, he's back in, Ken Walker, Derek Henry, Alvin Kamara, Breece Hall. And that's it. That's it, I think. That's it.
Forget about it.
Definitely not Joe Mixon in there.
Definitely not.
Wide receiver, Malik Nabers, if he's back in, Drake London, Chris Godwin, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, AJ Brown. I think that's good. And Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Forget about it.
And tight end, Kittle and Bowers. Kittle, Bowers and McBride. I think there are three nice ones to have.
Forget about it.
So let's start our projection beaters, Sharples. Projection beaters, guys we think who will outscore their ESPN projection by 4 or more points. Let's go quarterback, Sharples. Give us yours.
I'm going for Jared Goff, quarterback of the Lions. Projected 12.9 points, which coming off back-to-back 25-point-plus games. I can't believe he's got that low of a projection. He's racked up 600 yards and 5 touchdowns over the last 2 games. And coming up against a Vikings team that has been top 10 against fantasy quarterbacks so far, but I think this game is just going to be a real shootout and there's going to be a lot of points scored on both sides. If the Vikings get up, Lions will have to keep throwing it, keep slinging it. They've got plenty of weapons that you can turn into touchdowns and points there. But... if the Lions do start spanking them, as they did to the Dallas Cowboys last week, Goff showed that he will still keep throwing the ball, even when the body is long dead, cold, and rigor mortis has set in. So that's why I'm going for Jared Goff.
Lovely stuff. I'm gonna go back to the well. I'm gonna go back to the machine, the love machine that was so successful last week, Jordan Love. And I'll tell you why I'm going back to Jordan Love. Not just because he's a love machine. 16.6 points is a projection against the Texans this week, who have been okay against quarterbacks, but nothing to be scared of. Yet, I can't really figure out why Jordan Love is projected less than Bo Nix, Geno Smith, Trevor Lawrence, even though he's averaging far more than all those guys. So I do love Jordan Love. I love the love machine. But also, I'm playing the projection here because I don't really see the justification in it being this low. I mean, a lot of my argument for Love is going to be the same as last week. I mean, he's got 12 touchdowns through 4 games played. He still sort of can't shake the picks, but he's been absolutely slinging it. Jaden Reed, I think personally, has the makings of a top 10 fantasy pick next year. We saw Christian Watson be back and, you know, be that big play guy. I think there's only a matter of time before this projection of Love starts getting pumped up and we're no longer able to choose him for this segment. So I'm going to make the most of it while I can. Should be a decent game. 2 teams in the Packers and the Texans with very real Super Bowl aspirations. And, you know, all the talk about the Houston offense maybe stalling a bit with Collins. I do love Nico Collins. Think he's one of the best wide receivers in the league. But with Joe Mixon back last week, adding that dynamic, the Texans just scored 41 points. So I don't think either team is going to struggle. I think it's going to be another high-flying week for Jordan Love. And Alex Brindle picked Brock Purdy as his projection beater. Sharples, give us your running back.
I'm going for Joe Mixon, projected 15.5 points. I think it's a little bit low. Probably people still worried that he's come off a long injury. I think if he has another strong week, this is probably the last time we'll be able to pick him on here. But an efficient return last week against New England. He turned 13 carries into 102 yards and a touchdown, and 2 receptions into 30 yards and a receiving touchdown. It was encouraging to see him come back and sort of go straight into that position as the clear lead back. Hoping to see a bit more of that week one volume now that he's settled in. He got 30 carries week one. That would be lovely. Game script wise, not 100% sure how it's going to go. But like you mentioned, Lou, I think it's certainly going to be a high scoring game. And I think, you know, in those kind of games, there's always chances for big points. Should have the ball a lot in the red zone, and they really trust him in and around the goal line. So I think it should be okay, regardless of game script. And, you know, an RB of Mixon's class is generally game script proof anyway. So, yeah, 15.5 seems very beatable for Joe Mixon.
Yeah, I like that. I do like Joe Mixon. My running back projection beater will be Chase Brown, projected 13.1 points. I think he's slowly but surely winning the starting job in the Cincinnati backfield. I mean, since eclipsing Zach Moss 3 weeks ago, and subsequently being like pretty much the lead back the past 2 weeks, he's been averaging 18 fantasy points a game. And Moss seemed to sort of just get clean benched last week after he fumbled. So I think we could see a real switch in the backfield this week. Bengals are against the Browns, who not only are giving up over 160 rushing yards a game and almost 2 rushing touchdowns a game in the last 3 games. How many times can I say games in one sentence? They're also a team that are fully spiraling, you know, trading away the best players in a real limbo with their awful, awful, awful quarterback as well. Person and player, awful. Bengals are favoured in this one by, I mean, almost a touchdown. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of work for Chase Brown here, and I think he's going to solidify his position as the team's starting running back going forward. And Alex Brindle chose Devon Achane as his projection beer at running back. Wide receiver, Sharples?
I'm going for scary Terry McLaurin, projected 16.3 points. Yeah, he's currently undergoing a renaissance with Jaden Daniels. I think it should continue against Carolina. certainly not been a target monster, but getting pretty consistently targeted between sort of 7 and 10 targets a game. And crucially, Daniels has been looking for him in the red zone, got himself a red zone touchdown against Baltimore last week. And they're going up against a Panthers team that's conceded 30-plus points 3 games in a row now. So should be another big week for McLaurin. The only sort of wrinkle in it is, you know, can Andy Dalton and the Panthers keep it competitive enough so that Daniels has to keep throwing? But, you know, hopefully there'll be some big plays in there. McLaurin can grab himself an 80-yard touchdown and it can put my mind at rest early on.
Nice. McLaurin, I think, is one of those guys as well. This keeps happening. He's bordering on forget about it territory. So we're getting him while we can. I'm going DK Metcalf, projected 15.2. He was on a bit of a roll first 3 weeks of the season. I mean, well, the first month of the season, I should say. He had 3 straight games of over 100 receiving yards in weeks 2, 3, and 4. But in the past 2 weeks, it's been a bit tough. Coming in a really inefficient performance last week against the 49ers, caught just 3 of 11 targets. But there's a silver lining in that sentence, 11 targets. He's being absolutely peppered. I mean, in fact, Metcalf's tied with Drake London as the 5th most targeted wide receiver on the season through 3 weeks, which is a very lovely and fitting stat considering the two of them are going to be dueling it out this weekend as each team's number one passing option as the Seahawks take on the Falcons. The Falcons secondary, they've given up big performances to at least one wide receiver in every game this season, bar one. You know, George Pickens in week one was a nice game, but he wasn't really a blow-up performance. But aside from that, you know, Deontay Johnson last week, Mike Evans the week before, Chris Olave, Rashee Rice, Devonta Smith, all had really nice fantasy performances. And they are all the sort of X wide receiver in that offense. You know, with Devonta Smith, this was when AJ Brown was out. So all those guys are sort of that number one, that main guy, you'd think, in that passing attack, which is what Metcalf is, really. So I think he can have a big game in this one. I think it's going to be high scoring. Over under is 51 points. That's the second highest on the week. And I feel like you're going to want pieces in it. So yeah, Metcalf for me in this game, definitely. And Alex Brindle would like you all to know that his projection beater is Tank Dell at wide receiver. Let's finish it up with tight end, Sharples.
Don't want to say too much on this one because he's going to make me look a fool, but I am backing the resurgence of one Mark Andrews. Projected 6 points, not too high a projection. I'm not daft. 6 points against the Buccaneers this week. Yeah, not a lot to say, obviously, an absolutely torrid start. But the last 2 games, we've seen signs of life, 10 points, 15 points, respectively. A few more targets, obviously got himself a touchdown last week. And we sort of mentioned it before, when the Ravens go against teams that can put up points, they have to throw the ball more. Going up against the Buccaneers, who absolutely shellacked the Saints with 51 points. Don't think they're going to quite put 51 up against the Ravens, but should be plenty of cause to pass. And so let's hope that Mark Andrews can just sneak himself into the end zone for a touchdown. And that's pretty much all I need for him to be a hit. Mark Andrews.
Nice. I'm going with Zach Ertz, projecting 9 points. I mean, it's been sort of almost a resurgent season for Zach Ertz. You know, I mean, considering where he's been the past couple of years, I'd say. But yeah, he's 7.6 fantasy points a game he's averaging, which is fine at the tight end position. You know, you could get a lot worse. He's seen almost 5 targets a game, which is second on the Commanders. So, I mean, I feel like he's pretty safe. Not very exciting, but safe, and if there was ever a week to run wild, it's against the Panthers, as you laid out with your Terry McLaurin pick, Sharples. I know Al likes to do this, but he's not here this week, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to give you a touchdown guarantee on Zach Ertz this week. A touchdown guarantee, if that means anything. And Alex Brindle, you know, I'm really gutted that Al can't be here this week. So I would, his tight end projected beater is Jonnu Smith. Now, I would love him to be here just to justify picking two Miami Dolphins as his projection beaters. Miami Dolphins without Tua have been statistically probably the worst offense in the league. So,
yeah, I can understand the HM one because he'll probably do everything in the offense. But Jonnu Smith, then again, he only has to make a catch and he's at least not a bust. So it's a very Sharples textbook pick, to be honest with you. I can't be mad at it.
It is. And speaking of Sharples segments, Sharples trademark, Sharples things Sharples likes to do, you love to give us the game tiers, don't you?
I do. Not fantastic this week. Quite middle heavy. A lot in the meh, unfortunately. But we've got some nice ones up at the top. In the great, got Vikings, Lions, Packers, Texans, and Buccaneers, Ravens.
Yeah. I like them.
Into the good, Falcons, Seahawks, Commanders, Panthers. And I did on this one. Because neither have been spectacular, but I just thought, you know, Super Bowl repeat and all that, 49ers against the Chiefs. Into the meh, and this is somewhat sizable, got Saints, Broncos, Bills, Titans, Colts, Dolphins, Browns, Bengals, Giants, Eagles, Steelers, Jets, and Cardinals, Chargers.
I think you're up spot on there with them as well.
And then two stinkers in the bag. We've got Jags, Patriots, and Rams, Raiders.
Oh, I mean, the Jags, Patriots would be a bad game anyway, but it's a London one as well, and they're always, ugh.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff, and I think that'll do, Sharps. I did just want to mention, I know that you and Al were saying a few weeks back that it's like we should inject, this was off you're like, we should inject some more of our personal league, of our main league, into this podcast. I do like how you both have been very quiet about that, considering I just beat you both in subsequent weeks, this last 2 weeks in the main league.
Well, it's not saying much for me, because I lost this past week to a team that was 0-5 and put up a paltry 80 points. So, I'm just biding my time, hoping I can stay around about the 500 mark when Tua Tagovailoa returns for Tyreek Hill and Puka Nacua comes back. And then I'm hoping to propel myself into playoff contention. But it has been a turbulent, turbulent season for me, Leo. I will not going to shake that, not going to shirk it. Some draft picks didn't pay off for me, Rashad White being the number one who I drafted in every single league. So yeah, I'm pivoting, but we're still in there. We're still in with a shout. Just got to keep positive, and I will be seeing you the next time round when I have my weapons back.
Okay, yeah, that is a first shout, and I do like what you said at the start of that, where it's like, just got to get through it, because that is true. You just got to get to the playoffs, and then it's anyone's game. It sort of resets completely. So yeah. We'll leave it there, though. Thank you very much for listening. You can reach us on inthepocketacrossthepond@gmail.com. Check us out on Instagram, inthepocketacrossthepond. Alex isn't recording today, but he will be chucking the graphic of our projection beaters, the lovely graphic that he's colour-coded it, and I still don't really understand what the colour-coding is on everybody's names.
I just thought it was team's colours, but now you mention it, yeah, the text is sometimes an odd colour.
Sometimes green, sometimes white, sometimes red. But I don't know.
Is it like when you're going up against a team that's easy, like an ESPN projection, it's green? That's all I could think it'd be.
Yeah. I think let's go maybe with that must be it. Who knows what goes on in that guy's head? Certainly no fantasy analysis anywhere. Cheers. Thanks for listening. See ya.
How about them Cowboys?